The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
There is increasing demand for the European Union to act against Israel after its latest attack on a Gaza hospital, which killed 20 people. Yesterday, 209 former EU ambassadors and senior diplomatic staff published a public letter calling for urgent action over Israel's war in Gaza. We'll talk about Europe in a moment with Niamh O'Leary, Irish Times Europe correspondent, or Naomi, I should say, rather than Niamh. But first, we're going to Paul Rogers, Professor Emeritus of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, the outrage at Nasser Hospital is all the more difficult to stomach, given that it was what they called a double-tap operation. They target the journalists, and then when the much help goes to aid the journalists in difficulty and those who had died, they send another missile in to destroy those people. I mean, it's unconscionable.
It's unconscionable. I'm afraid it is an occasional feature of modern warfare. Gulf states have used it in their conflict in Yemen, and there's certainly been cases where the Americans have done something similar. But in the case of Israel, this particular incident, I think, has caused utter shock. There's one extra thing that's worth mentioning, is that the way that the Israelis are trying to move, well, probably all the inhabitants of the Gaza Strip down to the southern part of Gaza, then Nasser Hospital would be the only major hospital still functioning, and probably the only one in the whole of Gaza these days, apart from a few private ones. And there was even a suggestion, maybe actually happening, that the Israelis were allowing some updating of the hospital, recognizing that it would actually be used as there's so many, you know, 1.75 million or more Palestinians within reach of it, which it couldn't handle completely, but it could do something. So it seems that even that hospital, which is likely to increase in importance, has been a targeting. I think this is one of the reasons why you get such an outcry, really, across much of Europe, although some countries are relatively mild in what they say even now.
The question of a tragic mishap, as Netanyahu said in the immediate aftermath of this, when he was writing or commenting in English. I'm not sure he used the same language when he was talking in Hebrew. But almost immediately thereafter, you get confirmation from the IDF that they were targeting what they called a surveillance camera being operated by Hamas. So the tragic mishap was, in fact, deliberate action by the IDF.
Yes, it was. And I mean, if that is the situation, then why was it, as you say, a double tap? If they were going to target a camera, that could have been done in many ways with a very precise drone. So the problem is that we're finding that time and again, that what Israel is saying and what it is doing are often diametrically opposite. And I think this is a case of that. It's also worth noting that a British NGO, Action on Armed Violence, which as the name suggests, is looking at it from a rather anti-war perspective, but has a good record. It is estimated that of all the, what you might call, investigations that Israel has said it has carried out in relation to previous incidents, 88% of them all have either never been finished or have been abandoned without result. And there have been only 12% that even had a result. So I think this is an awful lot of this is just for, well, bluntly, for propaganda purposes.
Absolutely. And the whole idea is to protect the perpetrators rather than to find them and convict them of wrongdoing. Now, I mentioned the pressure on all sides. That letter from the former ambassadors and diplomats is one thing. There are, of course, street protests in Israel. We've had the second one within days of the first one, indicating the displeasure of many Israelis with the conduct of that war in Gaza. So, will that pressure be felt by Netanyahu, do you think?
It may be. This is what is very difficult to work out, because the majority of those demonstrations have been very much anti-Netanyahu and the failure of the war to get the hostages free. Opinion polls, I'm not aware of any ones done very recently, but certainly opinion polls within the last few months have suggested that the average Jewish Israeli is still keen to see Gaza settled by any means. And by settled, I don't mean occupied in a sense. Basically, the war brought to an end. And if that involves getting rid of all the Palestinians out of Gaza, then there is still modest majority support for that. There is some indication that is changing. that in fact more and more Israelis are getting so worried about the impact that this is having on their international reputation, which is frankly right down in the dumps at present, as one would expect, then there is that sort of development, but it's recent. Probably more significant is the fact that the Israelis are having a lot of trouble with the actual war itself, and I don't think people perhaps realize this. The Israelis, the losses on the Israeli Defense Forces are relatively small compared with the massive 65,000 or so on the Palestinian side, but there's still been nearly 1,000 troops killed, 18,000 wounded if you count severe PTSD, and 50 have been reported to have committed suicide. More significantly, the IDF is currently listing 14,500 Israelis as deserters or draft dodgers. So within the military, ideas are changing. There's certainly senior military saying privately, but we've got good sources on this, that basically the war should be brought to an end as soon as possible. And it may be there that Netanyahu is going to find difficulty. But for the moment, there's very little sign of it, and we always have the situation that he is really so dependent on American support, specifically for Trump, that if he loses that, then things would change overnight. But there isn't any immediate sign of that.
What did you make of the words of the special envoy, Stephen Witkoff, the property developer, when he said that Hamas had indicated, you know, certain concessions and that he expected the war to reach a conclusion by the end of the year?
And I think he added the word one way or another. And that, I think, is the worry. What is he meaning? I mean, he says that they are planning for the post-war era. Well, that post-war era could involve the clearing of Palestinians out of Gaza more or less completely. We simply don't know what is behind it. But, I mean, Trump has spoken about, you know, a post-war situation. It was going to be, I think, a Riviera of the Mediterranean, Eastern Mediterranean. So we simply don't know about that. But the problem is that previous experience suggests that whatever result is anticipated from the Trump administration would be bad news for the Palestinians. One hopes very much that is not the case, but that, I think, is where one has to draw a conclusion at the moment as far as things go.
Now, do you think that the United States is unique in its capability to influence Netanyahu, or could European voices, and I'll be talking to Naomi in a moment about this, could European voices be in any way instrumental, for example, you know, a cessation of trade with Israel at whatever cost to Europe, but certainly at major cost to Israel?
I'd like to listen to Naomi on that, but let me just speak from the British point of view. The British government is still bluntly, whatever it says in public, pretty supportive of Israel. I mean, Britain probably has the greatest links with Israel historically, you know, keeper of the mandate and all the rest. And if it had broken off diplomatic relations at some stage, or even did it now, that would probably have the biggest impact outside of the United States, possibly followed by Germany and then by France. If you have some sort of group thing which involves, say, those three countries and a number of other European countries, then that, I think, would be very significant. But it depended on how far it went. Breaking off diplomatic relations, embargoes of any sort, basically sanctions, any sort of basket of those would have a major effect on Israel. You would get very strong support for Israel from the Israel lobby in the United States. What one does not know is how the Trump administration would react to that, or even the threat of that.
So that they would tariff anyone who dared to show any criticism or punishment of Israel. Finally, Paul, I should ask you about the problem in the political parties in Britain at the moment. I mean, we remember the row about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. So the Labour Party has got to show itself to be completely, if you like, on the side of Jewishness, and thereby probably hangs a difficulty. But is there any clarity now emerging as to how you can distinguish criticism in Britain of the Netanyahu government without being anti-Jew?
I think it is rather easier to do in some ways, but of course it's also difficult for many Jews. I mean, essentially we're dealing with three phenomena. One, obviously, is Judaism, you know, one of the great three religions, monotheistic religions of the book. Then you have anti-Semitism, opposition to, in a sense, to Judaism as a whole, but certainly the position Jews may hold in society. And then you have the quite different phenomenon of Zionism. And Zionism is a political movement, not a religious movement. I think one has to remember that. And I think if it becomes easier to distinguish those two, then that is to the good. So you may get people much more strongly anti-Zionist, but less so anti-Semitic. Of course, what Israel has tried to do is to say they're both the same thing, but that's not actually the case.
Yeah. I mean, I have seen Holocaust survivors who are now elderly criticizing Netanyahu for even the misuse of the yellow star that they were forced to wear as prisoners of the Nazis, and to try and invoke the spirit of the Holocaust as a defense of Israel's actions, which is disgusting.
Yeah, but we're in a very interesting time in British politics. What is happening with this new party being formed, led by Zoe Saldana and Jeremy Corbyn, is quite astonishing. There's a heck of a lot going below the surface of that. I'm not sure that the Labour Party officially is even realising what's happened under their feet. And at the same time, we get reform coming through strongly.
And doing deals with the Taliban. I mean,
yes,
the world's gone mad.
Yes, I mean, it's quite extraordinary. I say, getting a sense of what's happening in British politics is extremely difficult, but we could discuss that for an hour and still not have a conclusion, I'm afraid.
Paul Rogers, Professor Emeritus of Peace Studies at Bradford University, thank you very much for joining us. Now, with me in studio, Naomi O'Leary, Irish Times Europe correspondent. Naomi, good morning.
Good morning.
So, what is the mood in Europe, I mean, for action against Israel?
That's the exact point, Pat. Action is what has been missing. There's been words for a long time now, but talk is cheap. There's still ongoing reluctance within EU institutions and among EU member states to take actions that will actually cost something to them. There is an awful lot that the EU could do. So there's an enormously lopsided trading relationship between Israel and the EU. The EU is Israel's biggest trading partner. About a third of imports into Israel come from the EU. And on the other side, Israel is only number 31. It's the 31st biggest trading partner for the EU. So obviously that hands the EU enormous leverage, particularly given that it has a trading agreement with Israel that has as Article 2 that Israel needs to respect human rights. And the EU's foreign affairs chief, Kaya Kallas, has said that Israel is in breach of that.
Surely that's game, set and match.
You would think so. But what I think the issue here is, one, the EU member states themselves don't have consensus on this. The smallest step towards action seems to be impossible. Germany and Italy blocked the latest attempt, saying they needed more time to consider it. That was an attempt to stop science and research funding going towards Israeli entities in Horizon Europe. That's relevant because some of that has gone to develop drone technology, for example, that's being used in the war. And that was blocked. Why is this the case? Is something to be studied by historians.
Well, obviously, if you look at the history of Italian politics during World War II and German politics, you had fascist governments in both, and maybe a sense of lingering guilt in among Italians and among Germans as to what they did to Jewish people during the World War II, and therefore they are reluctant to kind of remind people, I suppose.
There's certainly something of that sort going on in Germany. In addition to that, obviously, the EU is involved in a difficult dance with the US right now, not wanting to become the target of extreme sanctions from the administration of Donald Trump. So they don't want to upset the US. But it's gotten to the point where within the EU institutions, among civil servants and diplomats, there's real concern that people who work for the EU are at risk of breaching international law themselves because of being complicit if they continue to deal with Israel and do things with Israel that's actually facilitating an ongoing war, which now the International Court of Justice has said there's a risk, maybe a genocide. So, you know, this is becoming difficult for the EU to keep a lid on.
Some of the comments coming in: the actions of Mr. Netanyahu and the IDF grow more evil the longer their assault on Palestine goes on. It makes one wonder if Netanyahu is secretly glad that October the 7th happened, as it gave him the justification to do what he really wanted to do. How he sleeps at night is beyond me. That's from Declan in Dublin. And of course, the conspiracy theorists suggest that they allowed it to happen. But I won't go there because I don't want to give any oxygen to that kind of theory. How can the EU act on Israel? There's not even an EU majority in favour of taking action, and the USA has laws and policies on how to deal with countries who boycott Israel, which are way worse than the tariffs would be. No US company in the EU can participate in such boycotts, so any action against Israel would be limited in its impact.
Well, no. Let's just have a look at what the EU diplomats have said in their open letter that was published this week. They've laid out about 9 different actions that can be taken and could arguably be taken already. And not all of them require EU unanimity. One, for example, would be to stop the use of data centres, which may be being used by the IDF to store stuff like drone footage. That's something that would obviously impact Ireland. Another would be to take national sanctions. Not all sanctions require unanimity. You can already do visa bans and asset freezes on a national level. Another one would be pursuing legal routes. So many countries in Europe have the concept of universal jurisdiction. So it's their responsibility under international law to prevent crimes like genocide and war crimes. So they can actually go after people who have done things in Gaza, for example, if they're dual nationals, then there's a lot, thousands is the thought of people in the IDF are thought to have EU nationalities of different kinds. So there are different routes that can be taken without EU consensus. Of course, the Irish government will say that it would be much more powerful if the EU did it as a group, and that's undoubtedly true.
But even things like the data centres you mentioned, I mean, who knows where the IDF is storing its data? Is it in the Netherlands? Is it in Dublin? Is it in where?
According to investigations, the Netherlands and Ireland are, for example, being used by Microsoft. Microsoft, according to investigations by other journalistic colleagues, has been providing cloud services to the IDF, and it's likely not the only tech company to do so.
And do we have any news from Bill Gates about that? I mean, on the one hand, he's saving Africa with his own money. On the other hand, his company is facilitating the IDF.
It's interesting that there do seem to be double standards on this. And I think it reminds me a little bit of the Iraq war, in terms of it took a long time for it to become politically acceptable for people to admit that the Iraq war was a mistake. Now, in Ireland, it was always different, right? It was always very publicly unpopular. And Gaza is a little bit the same. I think here in Ireland, it's not always an appreciation of how different the kind of information environment can be in different European countries. We can appreciate then within Israel, you know, as the professor was mentioning previously, people have a completely different viewpoint on this. And when the IDF says things like it was a mistake or a blunder, that's much more readily believed. And in many European countries, especially at a leadership level, there are people who do completely have that other mindset. And that's something that is not as common in Ireland, and something that we probably don't appreciate as much.
So, short answer, it is unlikely there will be concerted, unified European action against Israel anytime soon.
Listen, there's certainly pressure on them to do so. And in the coming days, the EU foreign ministers are going to be meeting. And when it becomes difficult for them to sustain is when there is public pressure. These are, after all, politicians. They rely on being voted into office. So that is where there could be a chance for things to change. I also want to point out that, you know, the level of disgust that there is on the killing of 5 journalists recently by the IDF is, just to underline, the IDF fired with a tank into that hospital and said that it was targeting a camera. At the time, the Reuters journalist Hossam Al-Masri was doing his usual live streaming from within that hospital, and he was killed in that first strike. And then there was a subsequent one, as you discussed, targeting those people who were helping. This is an exact echo of what happened in 2023 when Issam Abdullah was killed. Another Reuters journalist who was doing a live stream, who was filming into Israel from Lebanon, killed again by tank fire. So particularly for organisations like Reuters, who I used to work for, it becomes almost impossible to continue to publish what the IDF says. And when they say these things are blunder, if they're doing the same things again and again.
It's a pretty unacceptable situation. I mean, the idea that they want to literally take the eyes out of journalism so that nobody knows what they're doing.
Well, it makes sense from a strategic point of view, doesn't it? If you don't want people to know what you're doing, you kill the journalists.
Naomi O'Leary, Irish Times Europe correspondent, thank you very much for joining us. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.